just want to scream!
If you've ever hurt yourself and couldn't deal with the pain, now you can with Darn It All.
So you mean now it's okay to curse whenever I hurt myself?
With new Darn It All, watching your mouth is a thing of the past.
Wow! I feel great!
Darn It All helps you deal with pain using the most colorful language available. Consult your physician before taking Darn It All. Side effects include sore throat, parents covering their children's ears, and rickets. Whether you stub a toe, crash your car into an abutment, or inadvertently cut off a limb...
Ah! Holy f***! Oh, no, 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 no!
Just say Darn It All.
Wow, this really works. It's either that or I'm losing a lot of blood.
So the next time pain hits you, say anything you want with Darn It All.
Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Always on Twitter Twit.
Mr. Always on Twitter Twit.
First, it was MySpace, then Facebook, and now you've discovered the ultimate in ridiculous, self-aggrandizing ways to waste time. It's called Twitter.
Look what happens when you don't have friends.
Ooh, I see you're following Britney Spears.
That used to be called stalking, yeah.
So if you see a guy feverishly typing on a computer or smartphone, don't be fooled. He's not working. He's tweeting about how he's pretending to work. And feel free to smack the twit out of Mr. Always on Twitter Twit, a real American hero.
Mr. Always on Twitter Twit.
Ashton Kutcher thinks it's cool, therefore, obviously it isn't.
It's time for the best morning show on radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, it's Sam and Sherry in the Morning. To join the show, dial 323-203-0815 and get in on the fun. And now, here's your morning show hosts, Sam and Sherry.
Heyo.
OA.
Welcome to Tuesday, November 17th. And we're back, and we're not sure we're all together, but we are back.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good, except it's really dry outside. You know, you notice how I complain right away? But no, I feel good. I feel real good this morning.
Okay, and I do bad accent, but the worst impression I've ever heard.
Well, do you know what it was of?
Yeah, James Brown.
Well,
no?
The beginning of it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What's the
rest of it was sort of a cowboy. Okay.
Okay, I have to tell you. No. I went back and listened to my accent from yesterday, and it was not a cowboy. It was Cockney.
Cockney?
Yeah,
okay.
You know, like...
What the hell is the difference?
Very different. One's English. It's English. It's like, okay. You know, the working people English.
That's what you think it sounded like.
Okay, well, I know it was a cowboy. I picked
the difference.
Listen, you're a foreigner. You don't even know what cowboys are. Okay. Whatever, I know my accents aren't good. I got it.
Okay, all
and
right.
I got reminded of that this morning already by you.
Yeah. So I feel good, but it's really dry outside. So it's like my whole face is dry. My nose, you know?
Yeah, no. Funny you said that.
Did
I was just on the
that?
Phone when I was driving here, and I said, the side of my nose is so dry today.
Yeah.
And then I was like picking it, but then I look like a leper. So I was like, you should probably just stop.
Sounds good.
I was like, that's really
what
sexy.
What a great visual.
Well, you can just look, see?
It's just scabs.
Okay, I didn't call them scabs. It's okay. Just dry skin. Let's get that clear, people.
All right, okay.
Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday to you as well.
Thank you.
And Yesterday's author never materialized, if you remember.
I do remember.
But we are going to talk to them soon about the pickup book.
Oh, good.
The rules of the game. So that happens then. We have another author today, and we're also going to have a studio guest, so we should have a fun-filled show.
As always.
As always.
As always. I've had such a morning already.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, what doesn't happen in my day? Yeah. Well, yesterday was my first day back having coffee, and when I went to get my coffee yesterday, they had to remake it like 2.5 times because it was made incorrectly. Uh-huh. And I was thinking already when I was driving there, like, should I get coffee? Do I really need the coffee? And so when that happened in my head, I was thinking maybe you didn't need the coffee. This morning I go and get my coffee. I get to my car and I spill it all over my car.
Oh my God.
And my first thought was like, oh my God, my brand new car. My second thought was, oh my God, I just lost half my coffee. And so now it's like all over my jeans. It's like all over
and
my
you're still
jeans.
Smiling, which is good.
Well, yeah. And then I wrote, I was like texting my friend and I was like, happy day, spilled coffee. And then I took my sunglasses out of my purse, bent. I was like,
yeah,
it's
I mean, you spill coffee and you still text while you're driving.
Oh, actually, it's worse.
Oh, it is?
Tell you. Yeah.
You're playing with yourself as well all at the same time.
Were you in my car?
No, that camera you think is showing.
No, I was texting. I was fixing my sunglasses. I was drinking my coffee, and I was doing a music video while I was driving on Laurel Canyon.
Yeah,
I'm a really good driver.
Yeah, you must have a good guardian angel. That's what you have.
I do. But yesterday, I gotta be careful. Yesterday, I got caught by this stupid camera. You know, the traffic light cameras.
Oh, really?
I was like driving to my friend's house. Yeah, and I didn't like really run it. I mean, I should have stopped.
Yeah.
It was on the yellowish reddish mark, but I sped up and flashed, and there's gonna be a $300 ticket in the mail.
Wonderful.
So I was just like, let it go, Sherry, let it go, till it shows up like at my door, and I'm like, fuck. So, yeah, that was good.
Yeah, and I wonder why you ran a red light.
I was not texting.
No.
That was the first
what
thought
were
I thought.
What you doing, though? You're posing for the camera.
I told my
friend, music video.
I told John this morning, I was like, it was paparazzi.
Yeah.
They were just taking pictures
they
of me.
They made you do it. Yeah,
smile.
They were chasing me, Judge. You know?
I had to go. I had to run the light. I'm sorry, officer. I got stopped by cops the other night. Well, not stopped. I was out.
Yeah, I saw something on Facebook. What was that about now?
Well, I was at my friend's party, and I had to just move my car. My car was parked behind my other friend's car in the driveway, so I just had to... I was intoxicated, but I was just pulling out of the driveway, you know, so they...
You mean you were fucking drunk?
I like to say intoxicated.
Yeah,
it makes it
I
sound
noticed.
Classier.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Okay, I was fucking loaded. I was shit-faced. I was banged up. I was intoxicated.
Okay, so where were you then?
I was in Hollywood at
in
my best
Hollywood.
Friend's house, and
okay.
I just had to pull out of the driveway. So when I pulled out of the driveway, she pulled out, and so we were just on opposite sides of the street, like, and so we were just sitting in our car, like, talking to each other,
right.
But we left the road open in the middle, you know?
Right.
So a cop pulls up right in between us, and he's on my driver's side, and so I'm loaded.
Yeah.
I'm fucking drunk, and I'm like, hi! And he's like, what are you girls doing? And I was like, just having girl best friend talk. And he goes...
From across the street.
And he goes, really? Like, oh my God, you guys are talking? And I was like...
Is that what he said?
Totally.
Really?
Because he was with a guy. He was with his officer's partner. And the partner just started laughing. And I just kept smiling and trying to flirt a little bit. I mean, they were really cute, but I was also drunk.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. Like
flirting with cops. Only you, Sherry.
I didn't mean to, but when I, you know, I have a couple of drinks, I get a little more flirtatious. Which is usually why I ended up on my hands and knees. I get overly flirtatious. Sorry, Dad, I'm just flirting.
Yeah. Yeah. Is he still listening?
I don't know. I talked to him yesterday and I said, well, you were on today's show. He was like, I was.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I talked about you. And he's like, I have to listen to that one. And then I had to think, did I say anything sexual yesterday? And I said, well, I did talk about cigarettes in my vagina.
Yeah, but that was it. Yeah.
Yeah,
I was
good.
Thinking about that yesterday. We didn't get into sex that
That's
night.
Why the show is so damn boring.
Yeah. No, I thought you would say it's going to be good anyway, even if we don't talk about
it. It was, right?
Yeah. No.
No. I fell asleep during the playback. I woke up this morning. I was like, oh, I didn't even hear the end of the show. I must have sucked.
I thought it was hilarious. I know what you wrote. What show were you watching or listening to?
Honestly, it's like when I'm not caffeinated, I'm on my own worst critic. Like, I listen back to the show and I'm like, oh, that was a bad show. Da-da-da. And then like I listen and my friends are like, what are you talking about? It was so funny.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm just
I don't think we ever have a bad show. That's yeah, if really I do good. Say so myself.
Good. Yeah. Someone needs to be positive here.
There you go.
I'm glad you're the happy camper. Yeah. Yeah, so no, so then the officers were just like, it was like, oh my God, is that what you guys are like doing? Or something like that. And I was like, yeah, are you like making fun of us? And he smiled. He was like, be careful, girls. And I was like, all right, good night.
Wow.
And then he took off. I was like, oh my God. And I mean, we weren't driving, but I guess because we are in a moving vehicle and like,
we weren't driving, but the vehicle was moving.
No, it wasn't moving. We were just parked. But, I mean, the key was in the ignition,
yeah,
so I guess.
Yeah, and you pulled out of the parking.
Yeah, yeah, I was literally just, like, out of the driveway. But, I mean, I guess yeah, I could have hit
somebody.
That
could be dangerous. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of accidents.
They always say accidents do happen closest to home.
Yeah.
I was really
and
close.
Plus, many people that pull out, you know.
And it was the middle street. Of Hollywood, and it's kind of crazy street. So, all right, fine.
Okay.
My aunt, I get an email from my aunt, and she was like, what are you doing drinking and driving? And I was like, I wasn't. I was just parked.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, I know you're smarter than that. I'm like, not like yesterday.
Only Sherry gets pulled over when she's not even in the car.
Well, it's just like car accidents. Like, I don't really get into accidents. I could, like, drive into park poles and stuff like that. Those are the stupid things that happened to me. Those are the weirdest life.
Yeah.
I did drink yesterday afternoon, though, which I had no intentions of doing.
Mm-hmm.
I left here the show, and I haven't seen one of my good friends in, like, a couple of months, maybe, or, like, 6 weeks or so. And I called him up. I was like, what are you doing? He's like, come on, let's go get drunk. I'm like, it is 11:30 in the morning. And he was like, are you working today? I'm like, no. And he was like, so? I'm like, all right, I'll be over.
Yeah.
So I went over, and We were gonna go see 2012,
right?
And we had a couple of hours to kill before it started. And I love playing pool, and so we said, "Do you want to go play pool?" And I was
like,
"Sure."
Will you go to a screening or something?
No.
Oh, has it started already?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
Don't go see it.
No, huh?
No. Mm-mm.
Why?
No. And I was drunk when I watched it. And you would think it'd be better.
Yeah, you would.
It was awful. I fell asleep on my friend's shoulder.
Really?
Yes. And well, we went to go play pool first because right. we had a couple of hours to kill. And I was like, all right, I'm just gonna have one drink. Yeah. Okay. Famous last words. Yeah. Like four drinks later, I'm like, wow.
Four drinks. What did you have?
Vodka sevens.
Really?
Yeah, and it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon
yeah,
at this point.
Yeah, duh.
And I'm just really, Sherry?
So you had four of those.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And then...
You're heavy duty.
Well, not normally.
No?
Maybe.
What does that mean?
Once a week. It's my once a week outing.
Oh, okay.
And it's my friend it's my party friend kind of thing, and I haven't seen him in 2 months, so we were just like playing pool and just having fun. Like, we weren't like having shots and things like that. We
right,
were just,
right.
But it was weird being at a bar in the middle of the afternoon, and like you have the old people in the bar that are sitting there with their books and stuff, and I'm like, oh, other people with books and bars, but they're like, they're all weathered and worn out and like old, and I just looked at them and I'm like, oh my God, this could be my future.
Yeah, it could if you continue
no,
that way.
And then there's like the old lady on the like little like touchscreen like computer machine just like drinking her scotch, and she's got a cigarette, she's outside with him, just like, what am I doing here?
Exactly.
But we were having a good play game of pool, and then we played some darts and stuff, and then it was like, all right, time to go to a movie. And I looked at him, I was like, I can't go to a movie. I'm ready for bed.
Yeah.
And he's like, bed? He's like, come on, you got me excited for 2012. And I'm like, all right. So we kind of drove, which was bad.
Yeah, duh.
That was bad.
Okay, so we're not gonna talk about that.
No, we won't.
Okay.
But luckily it was only a mile away.
Oh, luckily. Okay.
All right. I'm going to end that, people.
Yeah.
I really am.
How will you do that? By going to AA or something?
Okay, shut up. I meant the driving part, you fucker. You're such a shit face. I know you think I'm an alcoholic because I talk about drinking.
No, I don't.
No.
I don't think so.
So we went to the movies, and all I was excited at that point, I was just like, I just really want popcorn. Like,
yeah.
I hadn't eaten. I was drinking on an empty stomach, you know, which is... So we went to the theater, and we grabbed popcorn, and we go in there, and like literally within 5 minutes, like the previews, I'm already sleeping on
really?
His shoulder.
That's why you hated the movie.
No.
You know
no.
what happens, though? Sometimes I fall asleep during the movies, mm-hmm. and I hate the movie because you don't
then
get
you're
it.
Just like, you want to get out of there. No,
yeah,
no, no.
You don't get it.
No, no, no. I woke up, and it was honestly the cheesiest, worst lines ever. Like,
really?
They're in the middle of like this dramatic scene, and suddenly like they stop the whole movie for one of the characters to be like, I'll get this started. And then he talks to the car, and he was like, car start. And it was just like, I was like, are we watching like a James Bond film? Like, if that's what we were watching, like, this would be cool. But it was just like, it was just an awful script.
Really?
It was, everything about it was bad. And three other people in the theater walked out during it. So
really?
I knew it wasn't just me. And then
I read some terrible things about
it. Yeah. Like, it was just a bad movie. I kept thinking, someone needs to kill these people and the director.
Yeah.
Like, it was terrible.
Really?
Thank God I didn't pay for it. And my friend kept going, thanks. This is the biggest waste of $30 in my life. I'm like, well, popcorn was good.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, but I didn't even get to fool around with you in the theater. You were sleeping. I was like, you wouldn't have gotten any anyway. Fucker.
Fool around. I thought that ends when you were 18.
What, fool around? No. Oh, poor you. You're supposed to still have that passion with someone, like where you go into the theater and you're like, you know?
Yeah?
Yeah. At least in the beginning.
I thought that's just for teenagers. I don't know. What do I know?
I don't know. There was two people in the back row, like all the way in the corner, and there's plenty of room in the theater. I'm like, wonder what you guys are going to be doing back there. But we were so annoying. Actually, my friend was annoying because even when I get intoxicated, I still have respect for other people. Like, I know I'm drunk, so he just kept saying lines and talking. Kept going, shut up, you're going to annoy the people around. And the guy next to me just kept looking over, and I was like, sorry. Sorry about his behavior. And then he finally got up and left, and I was like, oh, he's moving to another row, and he just actually left the theater. So either he thought the movie was really bad, or we just annoyed the shit out of him.
Yeah, you annoyed the shit out of him. Exactly.
Thanks. I feel so loved. There's so much love in this room.
Yeah, well, you know, what do you expect from people when you get drunk? You know, I mean, I'm sure you were bugging the shit out of him.
Okay, first of all, I wasn't. My friend was. Yeah. Okay.
You were in on it.
I was busy snoring away. That's what I was doing, okay? And then we finally, like, left the theater. And then it was one of those movies
So you did leave in the middle.
No, we watched
the whole thing.
Because he looked at me and was like, I paid for this movie. We're watching it. But it was one of those movies, you know, where things start to wind down and, like, you know it's the ending.
Right.
And you're like, okay. And then a new scene starts. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. I kept saying that. I kept getting so upset because I was thinking, okay, we're finally going to leave. And it would at least happen 4 times where it would just, like, die down. And then something new would start. I'm like, this shit's never going to end. It was like 2.5 hours
of misery. Yeah, it sounds like you were dozing off. That's what happens to me
in the beginning.
Yeah?
Only in the beginning. Because then he made me take a walk around the theater. I was like, I got to pee. And he was like, yeah, and take a walk so you can wake up. I was like, okay. And I had some Diet Coke. So, yeah, I was fine then. And the drunkenness wore off.
Yeah.
And then I drove home. It was a good day.
I see.
I was in bed by like 9.
Good for you. Yeah. I don't know how I'd even focus on a movie when I drink.
You don't really drink, so you probably can't really focus on anything.
But I mean, I just, because when I picture it, it's just, I can't focus on anything.
Yeah, no. I don't really like going to movies drunk. Like, that wasn't my intention. And so when he said, let's go, I looked at him, I was like, I don't want to go to a movie like this. And that's when I said, well, then you're paying.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not wasting my money. And I really didn't waste it. He did. So, but have you ever gone to the movies stoned?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I can't go because I end up missing the whole movie because I stare at like somebody's eyeball for like 10 minutes. I'm just like looking at something and then I realize, oh my God, I've just missed the last 10 minutes of the movie. I get like lost or sucked into something that's happening on the screen. And then I don't remember anything. I'm like, what's going on? Who's that? Or else I think it's like the best movie ever and I'm laughing my ass off and it ends and I have no idea what just happened in the whole movie. People are always like, did you see this movie? I'm like, yeah, but I was probably stoned. I don't remember what it was about.
Yeah. No, I really get into it when I do, you know.
Yeah, but it all makes sense. And you see like it, well, I mean, in the moment I see it like deeper and I get all the hidden meanings behind it and probably meanings they didn't even know they were trying to put into the movie.
Just in your head.
Right. And then I forget it all. But of course, this was all when I was younger.
I see. Okay. It doesn't happen anymore.
No, God, no. Definitely not.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
So are you over New York yet?
Mm-mm.
No, huh?
Mm-mm.
No.
No. I was looking at it's on my screensaver, like my picture of Times Square. And then every time I get in the car, you don't listen to radio, do you? I mean,
no.
Well, music on the radio.
Yeah.
There's a song by Jay-Z and Alicia Keys that's called Empire State, is about New York.
Yeah.
And every time I get in my car, it's on every station.
Really?
Yes. And I'm just like, oh, God, stop it. Stop it. But yeah, I'm always like this when I go back there. And then it wears off and stuff.
Yeah.
The sparkle's in the eye.
Yeah, there you go. You know, I mean, it's a great place. In fact, I think the people we're calling today are probably in New York, too. I mean,
if
the past is any indication, they're all from New York.
Well, do they? Oh, they're there, like, presently right now?
Yeah.
Cool. We'll have to talk about New York a lot. When you posted what the book was about, I was like, this should be interesting. I work for some interesting bosses. I mean, you meet all kinds of personalities and stuff.
Well, you might as well introduce the book because nobody knows what you're talking about.
Oh, right. It's called Working For You Isn't Working For Me.
Yeah.
The Ultimate Guide to Managing Your Boss. That's my favorite part.
Yeah. Do you have problems with your boss, like at the restaurant and stuff?
You know what? I was thinking about that as I was driving here. I don't really have problems because I know how to deal with people. And ultimately, at the end of the day, when it's your boss, they're your boss. Yeah. So you just, I know how to handle people. And so I have control freak boss. Okay. I have the other boss that constantly needs to be complimented. Uh-huh. Like, and even if I know that they're wrong, there's someone that, like, every time he tells you something, one of my managers, and he's actually the Israeli one, you always have to just agree. Even though you know he's wrong.
An Israeli manager?
Yeah, he's my general manager.
Really?
And I always talk about you. I'm like,
I feel bad for you.
I always say, I have an Israeli in the morning and an Israeli at night.
That's the price you pay for being Jewish.
Well, it's just funny. I've never worked for any Israelis, and then I end up with two. I'm like, what did I do to deserve this? My mom's like, it's trying to get you back to your roots. I'm like, oh, please, you believe in Jesus. Yeah. Be quiet.
Back to your roots.
The Holy Land, the Promised Land, whatever. The land of pyramids.
With the pyramids and camels.
Camel toes. So you just know how to, I just know how to handle them. And people are like, oh, I can't work. This is this. And I said, well, get your own business. Like, when you know that you have a boss, like, it is their rules and it's their way of going. And so you just respect them and that's it. Like,
exactly. You work for them, you know?
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you want to work for yourself, then go ahead and do it. You know, I love that they have the ultimate responsibility. I show up, I do my job, and I do the best I can, and that's that.
Yeah.
But, you learn about, I work with 5 different managers there.
Really?
Yeah. And there's usually 3 or 4 on at a time. So when they each work completely differently, so you just have to adapt to each one, and one will tell me one thing to do and the other one will tell me about something completely different about them. And I'm just like, all right. Yeah. You know, and like my GM, like the Israeli guy, all I have to do is like feed his ego and compliment him, and I can get whatever
he's good,
I want.
Right?
Yes, exactly. Like, you fix his tie for him and he feels like, you're paying attention to him. Like, and then there's the other one that you just like constantly like smile him and be like, oh, you're right.
They're so you just, totally manipulate them.
It's not manipulating, it's giving them what they want.
Yeah.
They're my boss.
Yeah. No, that's good. I mean, it's a good thing.
I don't have issues. I've never had an issue with anybody that I've ever worked with.
Uh-uh. I've had some bad ones, you know.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah. I mean, there's one where I actually felt I was going crazy.
Really?
Yeah. I felt I was going crazy because I was doing and saying things that I would normally do.
Yeah.
You know?
You mean like job description? You mean like
the
job?
Yeah, like in the job and stuff. You know, like he would put me in a position where I have to argue with him.
Mm-hmm.
And... You know, it's just not a pleasant situation, you know?
Well, I mean, but is there
eventually
a reason to argue, though?
Live.
I mean, don't you just do what they ask you to do kind of
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, but if it's the way they say it to you, that's, you know, that's the thing, you know?
You know what I do, though, honestly? Like, I befriend all my bosses first kind of thing. Like, right when they start, like, I immediately am talking to them and, like, you know, making jokes and already.
Well, but that's the thing. I mean,
but then they
I
talk
did
to you
too.
Differently, but then they talk to you differently.
Because they are a different kind of person, you know? I mean, of course, everybody's nice in the beginning, you know?
No. I have some people that are just, like, you know, people that I work with, my fellow like coworkers, that are just like shits, or they just think they just have a problem with authority in general.
Right.
So they're the ones that are always having issues with managers and things that they ask them to do. You know what I mean? Like, it's all about your attitude, kind of.
I guess, like, yeah.
You know, I'm not saying you had a bad attitude.
You are saying that.
Well, you do whine and bitch a lot. I wasn't saying it directly, okay? You can read into that however you want.
Yeah.
Guilty conscience.
No, actually, I can think of at least a couple terrible ones. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I mean, you get to a point where they just push you too far.
Yeah.
You know, and you just go, I don't want to be here.
Yeah, well, sometimes it is time to leave a job, you know, and realizing that, you know.
Yeah.
I did have a boss that would, like, ask for ridiculous amounts of things and stuff, and I would passively aggressively like make jokes about it, like, yes, sir, whatever you need. That's my cowboy accent.
Yeah.
You know, and then they would be like, well, no, you know, I would just little things like that and just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So you have good bosses now, though.
Yeah, I mean, in their own ways. I mean, some of them, you know, some of them, their attitudes, like, what I've learned to do is not take it personally. Like, you know, if they're upset or if they snap at me or whatever, all I know and all I can do is go in there and do my job to the best that I do, and I feel like I do it well.
Right.
And
right.
So if they're having an issue with me or just in general, you can kind of tell it's just about them and their day.
Right.
You know, they don't really come up to me and say anything, like, but they'll get snappy sometimes, but I know that they're, you know, stressed out by the people above them. They have bosses too.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. I don't know. But a couple times I was ready to kill somebody. But no, I mean, currently I know of a couple people that left the job simply because they couldn't take the boss anymore, you know? I mean, it's, you know, if you have to get up in the morning and really resent having to go into the office or whatever.
Right.
Or the restaurant in your case.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible.
No, absolutely.
How can you possibly? You know, you spend like at least a third of your life at work.
Absolutely. Don't you feel though sometimes like people bring that with them? Like, not to like badmouth my mother, I love my mother beyond anything, but like every time like she got a new boss, like, or transferred location, she always talked about how everybody had a problem with her because like she was Jewish.
Yeah.
Like there was always like, they don't like Jews. Da, da,
oh,
da,
great.
Or they do like this or whatever. And I was like, Mom, don't you find it funny that everywhere you go, you have the same problem? I was like, did you ever think that maybe the common denominator is you?
You, yeah.
You know, and she was a great person, but she just had certain ways of carrying herself, you know, and
right.
thinking that, you know.
Not so good with authority, probably, right?
She ended up being boss. She liked, you know, there's certain people who are meant to be bosses, and,
right,
you know, and
right.
they don't like following authority or always think that they're right kind of thing, you know.
Yeah,
so I think sometimes people bring that with them, and maybe that's why they have problems. Like, did you do that?
Yeah. I have a problem with authority,
mm-hmm.
yes, yes.
Right.
That's why I'm grateful to my dad for sending me here when I was 16, because
yeah.
if I had to go into the military in Israel, I wouldn't have been able to take it,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's tough.
Yeah.
It really is, you know.
I can't imagine you, like, getting yelled at and taking orders. I'm out of here.
I know. I'd be in jail every other day, you know. Military jail.
So what you're saying is that this is why you had issues with your boss. It wasn't really about your boss. You just hate anyone
no,
that gives you
No, that's not what I'm saying.
You just hate anybody that tells you what to do.
Yeah. But no, I mean, literally, sometimes they're just like big assholes, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. No, totally.
They really are.
I mean, I've had to learn how to deal with you.
I'm not your boss. Get it out
I
of
consider
your head.
You my boss.
I'm not your boss.
Okay.
I'm not. I don't see how I am.
All right, fine. I'm taking the day off. Goodbye.
Good. You don't have
Talk to yourself.
You don't have to answer to me. That's the point.
I don't
you
know. I feel like my boss because then I have less responsibility.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Just kidding.
Okay. I know. Like a lot of responsibility you have, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I like it this way. Just
Coming
show up.
Coming here and yak for 2 hours.
Act.
Yak.
Oh, yak.
Yeah. Yakking away.
You just said I yak. I guess it's better than saying I yammer. She's yammering again.
Okay.
Babbling.
Call it whatever you want.
No, I'm saying it's better than yammering.
Yeah.
Yakking. Yak, yak, yak. Don't come back.
You know what? We
need a break.
Sharing for sharing.
No, already. I gotta be prepared for these things.
All right, so let's call our authors.
Oh, okay.
Actually,
since we're talking about bosses.
Yeah, and I think there's two authors, actually.
There is, Catherine Crowley and Kathy Elster.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we're going to speak
right.
to both of them. It's kind of like weird calling two people at the same time, but why not?
It's a conference call.
It's a conference call. There you go. No, not really. I mean, they're just, well, they're conference
squared.
Yes, good morning. We're calling for Kathy or Catherine or both.
Or both. You've got Kathy. Let me get Catherine on the line, okay?
Okay, thank you, Kathy.
Sure.
Okay. So we're calling Kathy Elster and Catherine Crowley, who wrote the book Working for You
Hello?
Isn't Working
hi.
For Me. Yes, hi.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hi. I'm going to close my door.
Okay. That's good. Thank you very much. Good morning, ladies. Thank you for joining us. This is Sam and Sherry calling you from
hi.
LA.
Good morning.
And
good morning.
Where are we calling you? What part of the country are you in?
We're in New York City, right in the heart.
New York City.
You are in the best city in the world.
Yeah. Sherry just returned from there, and she can't stop talking about it.
Or smiling
oh, really?
About it.
I'm glad you had a good time.
I had an amazing time.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad, because so many people don't. What did you like?
Well, my family's from there.
Did you go to the theater?
Well, no, absolutely, but I spent a lot of time there, and I've been in L.A. for 10 years now, so New York I've just missed terribly. It's been about 5 years, and so it was just beautiful
oh, it's
weather.
It's almost a former home for you.
Oh, absolutely. I was just there last week, and you guys had beautiful weather.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah. It seems like something about New York inspires people to write books, right? Because it seems like so many of our interviews are in New York.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think we could say in terms of our book, if you can get along with people here, you can get along with people anywhere.
I suppose, yeah.
There's a lot of material here. That's right.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, with all the people that you have to deal with every day, there's definitely a lot of material to write about.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, you both wrote the book, Working for You Isn't Working for Me. And you're offering people ways to manage their bosses. How did this book come about?
Well, I'll just jump in. It's Catherine, and say that when we were touring, we had a book called Working With You Is Killing Me in 2006, which was a national bestseller, and we traveled all over the country. And everywhere we went, every lecture, every talk, we would get great reviews, but then someone would come up to us at the end of the thing and say, this is great information, but you don't know what I'm dealing with. And it always had to do with a boss, with an authority figure.
Right.
So, And even though we did cover bosses and Working With You Is Killing Me, we really wanted to go deep into what's up with that relationship.
Yeah.
You know, we really wanted to get deep and to understand why do we all have so many issues with authority.
Right,
so
right.
So we really went on this in-depth journey personally, right, as well as professionally.
Did you have bosses at the time?
You know, everyone's our boss, right? Our bosses are our clients.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And our publisher. No, I have not had a boss in about 30 years, and now I know why.
Yeah.
You know, after writing this book, I've learned what my issues are.
Likewise.
So you've identified types of bosses, in fact, 20 of them. Can you discuss these? I mean, which are like the more difficult ones to deal with?
Well, what we tend to find are the most difficult are the chronic critic, because that's the person who finds fault in everything you do and, you know, kind of constantly takes your inventory and constantly puts you down. And then the other one that's difficult is the opposite end of the spectrum, which is the checked out boss, who's there physically but not there mentally or emotionally and not really giving you any direction, leaving you to sort of hang out there in the wind.
Right.
You know, and a new dynamic that we're dealing with now is the younger boss.
Right.
Where so many older workers are working for somebody who has less management experience. This seems to be a big issue.
Oh, yeah. That's true. That's true. So what are some of the issues? I mean, so, yeah, with the chronic critic, I can see the problem there because it's like they're never satisfied with what you do.
Right. Yeah. And you feel like you can't win. And I think over time that takes a real toll on a person's spirit, you know.
Right.
But they always put in their best. They try every which way and they just can't get a positive response.
Right. So then every time they get a new assignment or something, there's no point in doing it because they know it's not going to be, you know, satisfy their boss.
Yeah. They start to give up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they start to also second guess what the boss is going to like. And so every job becomes treacherous.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
So how do you deal with something like this without leaving? I mean, obviously, you're not going to change the person. It's probably part of his personality or her personality. How would you deal with something like that?
Well, we have a four-step process that we call detect the behavior that's really driving you crazy, detach, depersonalize, and deal. I'll take. So I just said detect. Now, detaching is learning to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're in one of these really tough relationships, we tend to stop taking care of ourselves because we just feel kind of poisoned. So the first thing we ask people to restore their energy, make sure that, you know, while you've got that energy in your body, you've got to get it out. Exercise, meditation, whatever works for you. Repair your emotional state. We suggest instead of doing what comes naturally, which is to go home and isolate and consume drinks and lots of TV, Haagen-Dazs, right? Actually,
so,
go.
Yeah.
Go
so,
out,
so you circulate. You don't let them evaluate who you are or determine who you are in your mind.
Right. Well, that leads us to the third step, which is to depersonalize. And if you've really detected that you have a chronic critic for a boss and you've done what Kathy's saying, which is to take care of yourself and take your power back and get some distance, then depersonalizing is just saying, okay, this person finds fault with everyone and everything. Mm-hmm. They did it before I came into the picture and they will do it after I leave. It's not about me. And you also have to figure out what fear they may be triggering in you. Like if you feel like you never are good enough or you really are stupid or whatever it is that they seem to be, you know, triggering in you, then you need to manage that fear, which is part of what we help people do in the book. And finally, the fourth step would be to deal, which is to figure out how to handle the boss both in the moment and behind the scenes. So with a chronic critic, when they come at you and they say, you did this wrong again and here's a mistake, blah, 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 dealing in the moment is actually just taking what they say, you know, writing notes and not responding, not having a defensive response, and then dealing behind the scenes is to find other avenues, other places where you can showcase your talents and get positive feedback because you need that in order to feel good about yourself.
Right.
These sound like great steps, like, honestly, just with people in your life in general.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But you know what I noticed is some people now, when we have email and that, are a little more, I don't know if abusive is the right word, but perhaps they're a little more forward than they would otherwise be. And then, you know, they would say things that maybe you can't get the tone of what they're saying and all that. And there's a lot of misunderstanding happening.
You're absolutely correct. Email is a big vat of where we can get into a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. And so we once wrote a great article called E-Missiles because, you know, so many people really don't, they say the wrong thing in an email. So we cover that in our first book, Working With You Is Killing Me, where we really talk about how to save it and how to be more appropriate.
But, and also to your point, Sam, I think one of the key things is to know when it's time to get up from your desk and go talk to the person.
Yeah.
Instead of interpreting and misinterpreting each other's messages.
Right.
Yeah, we believe you should strike when the iron is cool. So if you're heated, don't send it.
Yeah, you see, that's one thing I do. It's like you want to respond right away, but you're right. You know, once you cool off a little bit, you're not going to say.
I always wait before I do anything.
Really?
Yeah. No, even at work. Like, even at work, like if my boss is, you know, being disrespectful or rude or whatever it is, instead of me jumping, I'm like, Sherry, just walk away. I do the same thing. I'm like, this is about them. This is not about you. And then later, if I feel like it's still bothering me, but I'm, you know, cool down, I'll talk to them. You know what? I didn't really think the way you spoke to me before. Like, otherwise, things will be said that shouldn't be said when you're in the heat of the moment.
That's right.
Yeah.
So correct. You got it.
Creating those pauses is one of the key capabilities of anybody who's successful over the long term. And we think things so simple like drinking water or going to the restroom and washing your hands, walking around the floor, going upstairs or outside for a moment can be make the difference between, you know, doing something that's detrimental to yourself and someone else and finding the right way to approach a situation.
Right. So, you know, obviously you wrote a whole book about how to deal with bosses and stuff, but sometimes I would imagine you just really have to get up and leave. What are some of the circumstances under which you would tell someone, okay, you should leave now?
You know, we say that when you have become sick, mm-hmm. you know, when you're now having, you know, having to go to the doctor because you need blood pressure medication. We had a client once who needed a back brace. It was time for him to leave.
Well, that's like severe. They waited very long to
leave
that
obviously.
Job.
Very
yeah, the other sign would be if you're chronically depressed.
Yeah.
If you feel that there is no winning. You know, if you look like a POW with dark circles under your eyes.
Right.
And you really just cannot get out of bed in the morning.
Right.
And you've done everything you can. Sometimes the very most difficult boss is what we call a persecutor. And sometimes if you've been targeted by someone like that and they're on you and relentless about it, we really think you need to go.
Right.
Yeah, because no matter what you do, like really at that point, they're just going to...
Yeah, like you said, you can't win, you know, you can't win. And I think sometimes that's a very real sentiment that people feel, you know. And I think it is time to leave at that point.
But what's interesting about that, when somebody's at that point, they may not have the self-confidence to leave.
Right.
That's
so
true.
That's part of our technique is, you know, taking care of yourself and rebuilding your confidence. So some people may have to take the time to do that, and that would be maybe volunteering in another department or even outside of your company. Just do some volunteer work, something you can succeed at.
Right.
Yeah.
To begin to rebuild your confidence outside of the workplace so that you'll get your strength.
Yeah. And also seeking professional help in those circumstances can make a big difference, you know, to help you really understand the situation that you're in. Because very often people feel as if they're going crazy when in fact they're in a chaotic or a crazy situation.
Exactly. You know, and that's what I was telling Sherry before we called is there were a couple times in my career where I felt I was going crazy. You know, I was saying and doing things that I wouldn't normally do.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow. There's a lot in this, you know. I mean, there's a lot involved. But, you know, the way you were describing this as though you don't have enough confidence to leave, and that reminds me of, like, being in abusive relationships,
right,
you know?
Exactly.
And,
it's very similar.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And you let things go on for so long that by the time, you know, it's time to leave, you don't feel strong enough to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
And you also don't think anyone else would hire you. You know, if someone beats you down enough, then you start believing what they say about you.
Yeah.
You know,
and that is an abusive relationship where you're trapped by your own self-doubt.
Yeah, no, I have a coworker right now who is thinking about getting into another department in my restaurant. And because she's having issues with one of the bosses, like now she's actually like doubting her skills and everything. And I said, don't allow this person to have the power over you. You know, she was like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And I said, well, think about if this, what circumstance it would take to change, you know, for you to want to do it. And it was just that one person. And I said, well, you know, then you need to go and speak to this person, because if they're the one that's going to make you not, you know, step forward in your career, you know, that's a big issue. So, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why we spend so much in the detecting sections of our book of talking about the specific behaviors you may be dealing with, because it's important to be able to identify what another person is doing to you, you know, and to realize, oh my gosh, I'm with a rule changer, that's what's going on. Or, oh my gosh, my boss is really nice, but he's spineless, that's why it feels so unsafe.
Yeah.
You know, it helps a lot to really detect what's going on.
Yeah.
I work for a lot of rule changers. That's funny.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, oh, yeah. No, totally. Like, one day to the next, I'm like, but you just told me. Okay, Sherry, just shut up and just say okay.
Yeah, that's right. And always use a pencil. Sherry, I bet you're a harmonizer. That's what I would guess. You know,
yeah.
We have a boss baggage profile, you know, where you figure out how you relate to authority.
Uh-huh.
And you get to decide what kind of, how, what are your needs, your expectations, your fears going into a relationship. It sounds like you're someone who really tries hard to attune yourself with the other person.
It's funny. I just said it before we called you. I was saying that I just adapt to my boss's personalities. Like, you know, if I'm going to choose to work for somebody, then they're my boss and ultimately they have say. So, you know, if I want to, like, you know, boss myself, then I'll go be my own boss.
That's
funny.
But not everybody's a harmonizer.
Yeah, exactly. Sherry's definitely a harmonizer. I'm not so much.
You know, it takes all kinds in the workplace.
That's right.
And some people are challengers. You know, some people are observers, and I'm what we call a star. I need to keep moving forward in my career. And it can be quite challenging, but one of the things we hope will give people relief is that by taking the boss baggage assessment, you can understand your profile and
right.
your 50% of that chemistry, and then you can minimize the effects it has on you by understanding what you bring into the workplace.
Right.
But that's why I have no stress at work.
Yeah.
I don't hate going to my job.
Because you're a harmonizer.
Well, I'm trying to harmonize the whole world.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. That's the part that gets a little tiring.
Yeah, it's quite a task.
That's what those dark circles under my eyes are.
Right. It's
got
to change the world.
That's a lot of weight on my shoulders.
Yeah.
That's a big responsibility.
Yeah. Well, we're talking to Catherine Crowley and Kathy Elster, who wrote the book Working for You Isn't Working for Me, The Ultimate Guide to Managing Your Boss. Ladies, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on the book.
Best of luck.
Thank you, Sam and Sherry. It's a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Enjoy your city.
Yes, enjoy New York. All the best to you.
Bye, ladies.
Bye.
Oh, they're so nice.
Yeah, very
like
nice.
Them.
It's cool to have two people at the same time.
Yeah, that was fun, right?
Yeah.
It was like calling a dorm of college girls, right?
I know, like, dude, like...
I don't know.
You're weird.
Wow. That's a big discovery.
All right. We need a break.
Yeah, I got to pee.
We'll be back right after this.
On your computer, on your Wi-Fi radio, on your iPhone, commercial-free original talk, only on LA Talk Radio, your favorite talk station.
You want some in that?
Radio proliferates the internet. Two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Sherry in the Morning, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Ahem.
Your ear is... Okay, I'm not going to try to sing. That song that you're just playing is in my head.
Yeah, I know. It's in my head all the time. You know what? I've been playing it for a year.
You told me that before.
And I'm still not tired of it.
I am. I know, it's one of your favorites.
Well, I'm playing it for myself because I don't get to listen to it.
Well, you get the last 2 seconds of it. You're playing it for our listeners.
Okay, all right. Shut up.
Sharing with Sherry, sharing with Sherry. It's time to get down and tell your story. Stand still, Sherry. Everything in your heart, Sherry. Setting off from the start, sharing with Sherry. Gotta be real, gotta make it real. Sharing with Sherry, sharing with Sherry.
Okay, I gotta tell you everything in my heart. I don't think I can do that.
I was really hoping you were gonna be nice. So we could start this segment sweet.
It is sweet.
You know what?
It's always sweet.
You know what? I get a lot of people that just open up to me.
Yeah.
You're just a tough, hard ass. Yeah. That's the only difference.
I see. Okay.
Everybody else just starts
so it's
talking
me.
To me. I get emails like they're spilling lives to me and people I don't even know. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, what do I do to that?
Yeah.
Or for that? So.
Well, you're putting it out there, you know?
No, I know. And I like it. I like it.
Cool.
So today we're going to talk about ending the cycle, about people, you know, in downward spirals again, about people that just don't see the light kind of thing, and forgetting that every day is a new day. And about a lot of times we like have these stories in our own head of how things are, and we can just as easily as we punish ourselves, we can change that story.
Right.
That's my explanation. I'm going to read now.
Okay.
I've learned to cut it short. Okay. So this is from the Daily Om, one of my daily readings that I love. So here we go. One of the hardest things in life is feeling stuck in a situation that we don't like and we want to change. We may have exhausted ourselves trying to figure out how to make that change, and we may even have given up. However, each day offers us an opportunity to renew our resolve and to declare to the universe that we are ready for change. We may even say out loud that we have tried and struggled and have not found a way, but that we are open to help and that we intend to keep working to create change for ourselves. Making this declaration to the universe and to ourselves may just be the remedy for the stagnation we are experiencing, and it can be done today, right now. It is difficult to understand, even with hindsight, how the choices we have made have added up to our current situation, but it is a good idea to examine the story we tell ourselves. If we tend to regard ourselves as having failed, this will block our ability to allow ourselves to succeed. We have the power to change the story we tell ourselves by acknowledging that in the past, we did our best, and we exhibited many positive qualities and had many fine moments on our path to the present moment. We can also recognize that we have learned from our experience and that this will help us with our current choices. When we do this kind of work on how we view our past self, we make it possible for the future to be based on a positive self-assessment. This inner shift may allow us to get out of the cycle we've been in that's been keeping us stuck. Now we can declare our intentions to the universe, knowing that we have done the inner work necessary to allow our lives to change. Allow today to be the day to end cycles and enter into a new way of being.
Wow, that's cool. See, now that's inspiring.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why
whatever
I should stop.
Whatever you
said. I knew you weren't listening. Anyway.
No, I was.
No, I was like, don't pay attention to Sam. I'm not
inspiring.
Listening to you.
It is inspiring. Shut
no,
up.
No. Listen to that sentence. It is inspiring. Shut up.
It's
obviously not inspiring you to be nice. But again, it's true. So like this girl that's at work that's having this issue, like she gets to this place and so she stays there and then everything else is like so horrible to her and the next thing and I'm like, whoa, you just gotta stop. You know what
that's
I mean?
True.
Stop and
it
just
does, like,
start
feed
over.
On itself,
yeah, no,
huh?
That's what it does. And then more things just keep coming and coming and then you're so overwhelmed, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of just realizing that everything in your life has happened up to this point and you can learn from everything and you could start every day fresh. Like whatever issues you had yesterday, they don't exist anymore. Like look at it, take a new way of looking at it, you know?
Yeah.
kind of thing. So
yeah, I don't know what kind of life you have, but mine persists.
Well, that's because in your head they're persisting. I mean,
no, excuse me, if you owe someone a lot of money, it's okay, going to persist the following day.
Right,
too.
But you're making it a problem, an obstacle, as opposed to it just being what it is. Okay, you owe some money, but you're making it a difficult. It's the way you're looking at it, you know?
Right.
I think it was Pamela Beatty that said, who wrote Why Am I So Effed Up? I think she said that if you start looking at what you consider problems like more as opportunities, the things that come into your life, if you look at them as opportunities as opposed to obstacles, you know, you'll start seeing that everything works in your life for a specific reason.
Right.
And every door that opens and everything that happens to you is all on the path to get where you need to go.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's inspiring.
And I have an amazing news story that I think is awesome. I just saw it this morning. And it's this doctor in Pennsylvania, in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. And she used to have a private practice. And there's over 46 million Americans under 65 years old that have no medical insurance. And she used to have her own practice and was making lots of money and just kept seeing people that were coming in and had no insurance or anything. She sold her practice. She sold part of her house. She opened up a clinic and now treats anybody with donations. So if you can afford a dollar, they pay a dollar. If you can afford $100, and she treats them, and she has all volunteers that work there, so she doesn't have to pay anybody.
Right.
There's a retired pediatrician that shows up 3 days a week to take care of people, and people's lives are being saved. She's given up her own lifestyle just to help people that do not have it, you know? And it's not just people that are like, oh, they're unemployed. I mean, it's, you know, wives who had a husband and they're now divorced and she used to be under his, you know, health insurance.
Right.
Or, you know, it's college students that, you know, don't have health. It's anybody, you know? And no one in this country should suffer. And she gave up her own lifestyle to treat these people. And so, and it's not like people are just paying a dollar. Like they were showing on the news that this guy comes in, you know, and he doesn't have a lot of money, but he gives her $45, like whatever they can afford, you know?
Wow, that's really pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's definitely cool. She said she's taking her life's work, and it's what the medical field is really about. And she said, and she's really here to save lives and help people. Ultimately, at the end of the day, it's not about the money.
Yeah.
You know, money's great and all, but she said she's getting so much more fulfillment out of her life now than when she had her own practice and she was driving all these nice cars and all
that
kind
true,
of stuff.
That's true, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Here to serve
that's
each
what
other.
People are remembered for, you know, not for how much money you had.
That's
you
what
know?
I'm saying. Yeah. It's all about what you do, you know, and I mean, do as like a human being, not like what you do as your job or, you know, what kind of house you have or what kind of car you drive and all that,
right.
You know, it's at the end of the life what you've given to people.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, that's one thing that always occurred to me, you know, it's, you know, when you're dead, you know, people are not going to talk about how much money you
right. He drove the nicest
know.
Car.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's true.
Yeah, they're going to talk about what kind of a person you
absolutely.
Were.
Absolutely. Like when I've done, I told you I do eulogies and stuff like that. Not that I love doing them, but it's actually I do like doing eulogies because it's an opportunity to celebrate somebody's life.
Yeah.
You know, and when I'm thinking about writing them, I'm not like, wow, he drove a nice ass car.
Yeah.
You know. So it's just it's doing things for one another and. Honestly, I've thought about this. If I never make it in my life to like as a talk show or whatever, like it's about the things that I do and how I treat people every day and in the life that I have right now, you know, and that's really what's important.
Yeah.
You know?
So are you going to do that too?
Do what?
Like, you know, over, I don't know. Maybe do something on a voluntary basis.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's one of the reasons why that I want to be so big. It's not like, sure, I mean, nice things will come with it, but the more influence that I have, the more that I can help people and change their lives, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying, like, and when I mean on the smaller level, and I mean this show, I don't mean that it's a small thing, but I mean, if I can do my part even here or, you know, in the restaurant when I wait on the guests, the reason why I treat them so kindly and do these things because it's the people that you meet every day in your life.
Yeah, that's
that,
true.
You know,
it
you don't
makes
wait,
you feel good, too.
You don't
you
wait
know?
Until you have a certain amount of money or a certain thing to do things. You can do it at any point in your life.
That's true.
You know?
That's
true. And that's why I smile and try to be nice to everybody.
Well, good. Good.
Yeah.
Now, that made me hungry.
You have the weirdest connections to things.
I do.
Because I said restaurant?
But no, just because I'm thinking of food right
okay.
now.
Okay. Well, once again, just paying attention.
I feel like a good
salad. When
are you
coming into my restaurant?
I'll have to, huh?
We've been talking about this for a couple of months
that's
now.
That's true, yeah.
I can get you a discount.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Then we'll make it maybe this weekend
or
something.
Yes, you guys should try to come in.
Yeah.
It'd be nice.
That would be cool.
Except it'll be weird. I'll be like showing up, like serving you.
So when I come there, I have to say I want to be in your station?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, unless you don't want to be.
No, I don't really.
Because then I have to judge your tip.
That's true. Huh? It's like whatever I leave is not going to be enough.
Oh, shut up. That's okay. Whatever kind of service I give you is not going to be good enough. Food's going to suck. You know what? I don't even think I watch it in my section. Why, this food is cold. So I'm just gonna be like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Buy him a damn dessert and tell him to shut up.
That's the thing. I always complain about the food, not to the waiter, though, to the people around me, you know?
Yeah,
it's that it's always too hot, too cold, not this. Not that.
I feel so bad for the people you hang out with. Maybe that's why you went on vacation by yourself.
Yeah, there you go. No one can stand the complaining.
It's okay. I'm sure it's endearing to some.
Yeah. You sure, huh?
I make fun. I think our guest might be here.
Yeah, I know. Oh. Well, okay, we just got to summarize this. And,
okay.
Take your face and hold it there and hold it there and hold it
summarize.
There and hold it there so I can come on it. Take your face and hold it there and hold it there and hold it there and hold it there so I can come on it.
All right, the hell.
Yeah, thank you.
Talk Radio Channel 1. Call in, dial 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815.
Let's get back to Sam and Sherry in the Morning.
Sam and Sherry in the Morning.
Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Talk Radio.
Okay, and we're back. I forget this is the abrupt one.
Yes, it was. I felt like I had whiplash now.
That's not from that.
Oh, you know me already.
We should probably introduce you.
She sounds like she can't wait. Good morning to you, Trish.
Well, good morning.
Welcome to the studio.
I'm glad to be here.
Good.
We're glad to have you.
I see you brought us coffee already.
She did.
Wow.
I know.
We could use more, right?
I know. My eyes are like glistening when I saw it. I was like, wow, you drink a lot of coffee. She was like, it's for you guys. I'm like, yes. I was like, I'm getting worn out after the first hour and say, I won't put a damn coffee machine here because then I have to clean it.
Yeah, I mean, those never get cleaned.
No, huh?
Ever. Not even at my house.
I know. And who drinks coffee in the office anymore? You know, it's all Starbucks and stuff.
Yeah,
now,
I know. Right? But who's going to, you know, this is perfect for the second hour now.
Yeah.
But we all can't afford assistants to make the coffee anymore. Yeah. So we have to do it ourselves.
Well, I've got an executive assistant now. I didn't tell you that.
That's what you were just saying. Okay, do tell, dear.
Well, it's my friend that kind of likes me. Like, every time I say I have to do something, he goes, I'll remind you. And so he sends me a text every day of the things I have to do for the day.
Really? That's cool, huh?
It's very sweet.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, I could either call you my slave or I can give you a nice title like executive assistant. You have your choice.
Ooh, and then you can have role play with executive assistant.
We've already talked about that.
Oh, wait. Is that him underneath the table? What's going on here? I wondered why that text got to you so fast.
Yeah. Oh, please repeat.
Put it on vibrate.
Right. Yeah.
Well, so are you into role playing and stuff too? Yeah. Okay, we'll get to that later.
That's first.
Well, you brought it up, you know.
Well, yeah.
So, are you originally from LA?
No, actually, I am military brat.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I was born in Montana and moved 2 weeks later, of course, just like a good military brat would.
Uh-huh.
Yes, over to Ohio. Grew up on a horse farm in Ohio.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, how cool.
My father was a military fighter pilot jock and worked at the Pentagon for a while, so I have a very different upbringing than most people.
I would imagine, yeah.
You
have to be very smart to be a fighter pilot.
Yes, you do. Yeah. And great eyesight as well.
Really? Yeah, I guess it goes with it. Right?
Yeah. To check out the other fighter pilots.
Right. Well, that's what I do.
Yeah, that's what you would think.
But like
about
cat-like reflexes, I guess. They have to have that to make sure they dodge bullets and stuff. But yeah, you know what my dad gave me as a gift to when I came out to L.A.?
Uh-uh.
This is so typical military. A 600 megahertz stun gun. He goes, here, honey. I want you to be okay. I'm like, thanks, Dad.
That's awesome. Most people get like a map or a Thomas guide.
Yeah, exactly.
You get a gun.
I know. When I moved to New York, it was a 38. And then now I guess he's realizing that I can take care of myself. So maybe I just get a stun gun now.
Yeah. So you grew up in Ohio. And then where did you move?
Then I moved to New York City.
Woo.
I was on the...
Everybody ends up there, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course,
one
New
time
York
in
girl.
Their life.
And then dumb people leave.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. Oh, God, I love New York.
Mm-hmm. I can't even talk about it anymore. It'll make me cry.
Well, you just got
she to, just got back from there,
she,
yeah.
She has a double afterglow, Maine and New York.
Yeah, it's a couple of things.
Oh, yeah. So
yeah, we never got into the other thing yesterday.
Nor will we.
Oh, I see.
Oh, okay. Come on.
I know. I'm like, suddenly I'm like Miss Private.
Oh, that one last
I talk
one.
About my privates all the time on here, but now, now my life story is private.
Yeah, well...
It's all in the definition.
It must be serious then.
Yeah.
let's back to you, Trish.
Oh, God. Here we go.
So, New York City, and how long did you live there?
So, I lived there for over 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Where?
You have to live at least three or four places.
Right, of course.
I started on West End Avenue.
Okay.
And then I went up...
Like the Upper West Side? Were you on the Upper or down?
Yes, like 74th and West End.
I was 78th and East End.
Oh, my gosh.
We were like on opposite sides of the tracks.
Telling you. Yeah. I'm sure we were both on the wrong side, right. But it was, you know, opposite.
Depends how you look at it.
Right? I was on my knees.
Oh, yes.
All right, so.
Her favorite position, by the way.
Jeez, that's what I was doing wrong in New York the whole time. I didn't realize it.
Yeah. She role plays every moment of her life. Are you kidding?
Oh, goodness.
I'm just getting in a lot today because I didn't get any in yesterday.
Oh, I showed up on the right day.
Yes,
yeah,
you did.
There you go.
It just brings it out of me.
I just feel like I need a seatbelt. I just kind of.
You don't know what you get yourself into, right?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I'm getting to there.
Good.
I'm
and starting... you're excited, right?
Yeah, I love it. Could be just the coffee.
It's okay. Yeah, Sherry is harmless. Don't worry about it.
That I am. That I am.
Oh, my goodness. So then after that, I moved up to Harlem. So, and it was wonderful. I lived way up on 113th Street.
Oh, so Spanish Harlem.
Oh, it was great. Well, at the time, it was more Jewish Harlem.
Oh, okay.
Like, we had an old lady Jewish home across the street.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And they were so nosy.
Yeah.
They always are.
Okay, listen, this was great. We used to go over and play, like, euchre with them and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
They were so nosy that they used to look out their windows and check out everything in our apartments. The guys downstairs from me were getting robbed.
Really?
And they called the police and caught them. Because the little Jewish ladies were like,
their neighborhood watch.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. They're like, oh, no, you didn't. You're not doing that to my people.
All those yentas.
No, totally. My Jewish. Like,
so there's Jews living in Harlem? That's pretty
interesting. At that time, yeah.
Really?
I mean, I love those little ladies.
I don't know. I just remember stumbling out of Spanish Harlem apartments.
Yeah.
Ciao, baby.
Was that on your knees, that part?
I was just on my back. Like a thrown out.
She remembers every position and where.
I never can remember the address. You're amazing.
Just in the hundreds. Spent a lot of time there.
Oh, my goodness.
So you grew up on a farm. That's pretty interesting.
Yes.
So, I mean, were you exposed to, how old were you, like in your teens and stuff?
Well, we moved there when I was 2 weeks old. And kind of, with military, a lot of times they'll take you out to, they'll take you out for 3 months and bring you back or do crazy things like that, like SAG and, you know, all these different tactical things my father used to have to go out to. So we'd go out to Alabama at one point and Texas. But most of my time was spent, I mean, I had a paper route. I did it on my pony.
Yeah.
On your pony?
I did it on,
how cool is
that? My little Schwinn bicycle.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And it used to take me forever to do my paper route because it was, you know, rural America, and you would run into all these different people. And
they want to talk to you with your pony.
Oh, my gosh.
I'd sit on my porch and wait for you to deliver papers on your pony.
And I would just be there, and I used to roll this lady taught me how to roll her cigarettes. So I used to roll 30 cigarettes a day for her and sit there with a little machine.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can imagine. It was crazy. I had, like, probably 25 people on my paper route, and it took me 3 hours to do it.
Yeah.
Like, people at the end were like, okay, it's 6 o'clock, Mrs. Vogel, where's your daughter? I haven't got my paper yet. It's like, it's news from yesterday already. So, and there was this other lady that used to dress in leopard, and she read me coffee, tea, or me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a little bit of I'm like, no wonder I'm so messed up. This happened when I was 11.
Uh-huh. I was in Porky's at that age.
Yeah, see, I'm like, what in the world?
Yeah. But when you move around, it's hard to plant any roots and stuff, huh?
No, that's why I can, you know, I'm good at getting in, getting out.
Yeah, yeah. I know, it prepares you for life, pretty much, you know?
It does. You never meet a stranger, but then you kind of, you don't go as deep emotionally, I don't think.
Right.
Yeah. I think I have that kind of issue where...
Is it because you know you're going to be leaving soon kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's hard to make friends because then it's disappointing and painful when you have to leave.
Yes.
You know.
At the same time, you can also think about it that you get to have friends all over the country.
Yes, you
That's true.
You know?
I do, and I still keep in touch with some of them, so it's great. I mean, I have one friend that I knew from back in the farm days.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that's cool.
I know, it's so amazing.
Were you like always excited to leave, or were you sad when you would like move around a bunch, or it was just kind of normal?
Well, I think there was only one time that it was kind of a bummer. We moved to Alabama for like a year.
Where in Alabama?
Montgomery.
Okay. My dad's in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, my gosh. Oh my gosh. That whole year was unbelievable because I so many things. I went to Catholic school up until ninth grade.
That's another reason why you're messed up.
Yeah. Oh, still recovering. But it's actually kind of cool because it makes you a little kinky. But we went
to Catholic school.
I never went to Catholic school.
Yeah.
That's true. But then in Alabama, it was an interesting experience. It was my first experience with public school, as well as I went to a predominantly black junior high.
Mm.
So it was Georgia Washington Junior High School, and it was just so different that I didn't even understand. You know, my father, my mother's French, and my father we just didn't understand prejudice. I mean, I grew up on a farm. We didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to go there and be a part of the South all of a sudden, where it was just such a different mindset, it was so unbelievable to me people could have prejudice, and back then, you know, there was, I think, three years, and it was the first non-segregated prom.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have a black prom and a white prom.
Wow.
Really?
It was really unbelievable.
Wow. So were you like one of, since you weren't used to racism and segregation, like you obviously were friends with everybody.
Yes.
But did people, so did you have problems? Like were people judging you for like being friends with like the black kids and stuff like that?
I guess I was kind of already judged because first of all, I was a Yankee coming down south.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I came down and from the farm girl kind of mentality, like I'd never had met a stranger. Mm-hmm. Hi, how are you?
Yeah.
You know, and all the girls were
so
all,
like really friendly and everything.
So they didn't know how to handle that. And all the girls were really beautifully coiffed, as you say, Southern belles.
Okay.
I mean, there was more hairspray. You didn't want to light a match. I'm telling you, in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And it just, it was just a whole different world to me that I didn't understand certain protocols about the South.
Mm-hmm.
And so, first of all, that was a couple of things down. And then with the other part, they even like said that I was the favorite white girl of all. You know, isn't that strange that actually existed back then?
Yeah.
It did make any sense, but that was kind of a painful year because I didn't really fit in. I knew I was leaving again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. So you had to suffer like through stuff and you knew you were going to go anyway.
Yeah. And then I ended up we went back to Ohio then. So, and ended up in a different place in Ohio altogether. So then my other best friend, she didn't even talk to me when I came back. So that was the rough one.
Yeah.
So then I think that's why I'm cold and bitter and I'm cut off now. I just did hurt me so bad.
Yeah. Were you close to your parents though? I mean, they stayed close to you since you moved around a lot and they probably knew.
We had to be, but at that time my father was going into some things. My mom was, you know, uprooted. I have four older sisters.
Oh, wow.
One was off to college. You know, they were off to college. There were so many things happening. I mean, I had to pack the whole house with my other sister, and we drove down by ourselves and moved to Alabama and got there first without parents.
Oh, wow. And how old were you?
I was, I had to have been 13.
Wow.
14, yeah.
That sounds kind of fun, though. Yeah. I mean, the trip and everything.
It was great. I mean, we smoked cigarettes the whole way down.
Obviously, you matured quickly because of this kind of lifestyle, right?
Yes.
This upbringing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also having four older sisters, I never wanted to miss anything.
Yeah.
So I always stay up. I'm always the last one to go to bed, the first one up. Never want to miss a thing.
Yeah.
Because they're wonderful. I learned so much. And I have one of those families where the sisters are very protective.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a fighting kind of competition thing.
Yeah.
Because I was a baby too, so.
Yeah.
They all wanted to look out for you.
They did, and they still do.
You gotta love that.
Yeah.
True that.
So you went to Catholic school as well.
Oh,
what was that like?
Small checkered skirts.
I can still fit in mine.
Really?
Yeah, I was a big girl.
I was really short. Yeah.
You're pretty tall, huh? How tall are you?
I'm just under 6 foot.
Really?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Big German girl.
Yeah. Yeah, like look out, right?
I know. I'm German, Irish, and French. And I usually say that means I can drink a lot, tell good stories, and have a little bit of class when I do it.
Yeah.
The French and friends.
And you can go bed of good.
But of course. But of course. Oh, wait, no, I didn't start it yet. But yeah, so I mean,
Have you traveled outside the country at all? Like to these places?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was an exchange student in La República Dominicana.
Okay.
Where is that?
Por 4 meses. Santo Domingo. Yeah, I was
I don't know what that
Puerto
is.
Rico?
No,
oh, Puerto Rico.
No, Santa Domingo. Yeah,
just
right.
Kidding.
It's near.
Okay.
Talk to Miss Geography over here.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm like, duh, Puerto Rico. No, yeah. Just kidding.
You know, you're really close, though.
Yeah.
It's an island.
So
right?
Dominican Republic.
Yeah, Dominican Republic.
Okay.
And I did that when I was in between my junior and senior year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was incredible. I was the only...
Was that in high school?
Junior, senior high school.
Okay.
I was the only
white girl.
Blonde on the island.
Ooh,
hello.
That is fun.
Rubia. That's all I heard crossing the street or anything. So.
Yeah.
Oh, they love their blonde girls.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, because you represent white people.
It was just like...
You are like Milkmaid America.
And they totally... A lot of them thought I would be really easy because of what they watched on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. Well, I think anyone's easy compared to like their own kind, because like Spanish women, like their fathers are so protective over them, you know. So I think they see anyone American and they're like, "Woo, they're just spreading their legs."
Yeah.
You know.
And I was, but that's beside the point.
So you were the whore that they thought you were.
Exactly.
Awesome.
So at what age did you start spreading then?
I don't know why every time I'm still shocked by every question you ask, even though I'm so used to you.
Actually, I just.
Well, she opened up the door.
No, I know you didn't do anything wrong.
But not my legs. I
know.
That today. I opened the door, but not my legs. No, I actually waited. I had a bet. You know, the girl I was telling you about, nothing like going full circle here. The one that I told you that's friends, I'm still friends with from the farm days.
Right.
she and I had a bet that I couldn't make it to my 17th birthday. So big steak dinner, all that. I even went, I mean, I am so responsible, so military, that I went 3 months before and, you know, got on birth control.
Really?
You had it all planned? I had it all planned. I'm like, this is what I'm doing. So, because by God, I wasn't going to miss a meal.
Yeah.
A free one. I was not going to miss a free steak dinner. So I did it. I made it. Wow. And on the night of my 17th birthday, I waited till midnight.
And you had a big steak.
I sure did. I had a really good experience.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Really? For the first time? That's unusual.
The first
time
was an incredible experience.
Who was he?
Really?
He was actually like a friend of a friend, you know, like an older guy that we'd all hung out
with. Oh, so you all did. Yeah. He went around and de-virginized everybody.
Yeah, really. I was 17 at midnight, and he was probably about 20.
Yeah.
Okay. And I just said to him, I said, hey, let's, you know, let's fool around. Started fooling around. I said, let's come on, let's go for it. And he goes, are you sure? I'm like, of course I'm sure. Let's do it. Then I'm like, under my breath, steak dinner tomorrow night. This is going to be so good. So he was so sweet. We did it. And then he took me in the shower and gave me a shower and washed me and, you know,
really?
Bubbles and the whole thing.
Wow.
And just so sweet. And then took me back to bed and cuddled with me the whole morning, kissed me on the forehead, and
aww,
that was the way I lost it.
Really?
That's really
yeah.
nice.
Wow.
Mine said to me, are you sure you're a virgin?
Actually, he did say that to me, because he said, you move too much. I was like, what? It was like, maybe you were just small and I didn't feel it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Then mine turned gay. Yeah. And it was all
oh, no, really?
Yeah, well, he says he's bisexual. I'm like, gay.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, no.
Yeah. She's been around the block a couple times.
No, but that's really nice that he did that. Because a lot of, because you're always going to remember your first experience.
Right.
So that's like, it's kind of like setting a bar for you, you know?
It's true.
Every guy should bubbly
yeah,
up.
Exactly. Now I'm just at the bar.
Yeah. Yes. But now you're obviously that's sexual funny. Before that, right? I mean, you grew up, what, did you discover sex early?
Gosh, you always do. I mean, I think most mm-hmm. people do, especially yeah. in Catholic school. It's so forbidden. Oh my God. That was the wildest thing. The first thing I remember sexually is, this is so horrible. I'm so going to hell, but I'm going to go anyway. Yeah, I'm not worried about it. I'll say it anyway. I remember looking up at Jesus on the cross.
Uh-huh.
He's naked, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
I'm in
and
second.
You thought it was hot?
Oh God. Yeah. I'm in second grade. And then we used to do the Stations of the Cross. And then they would say, stripped of his clothing. I swear to God, it made me weird inside. I was like, ooh, that word stripped, still to this day, makes me all gooey.
And years later, you found yourself on stage taking dollar bills.
No, I'm not good at that. I'm not that graceful. I would if I could.
Okay.
But like, I remember that mm-hmm. looking at that. So, I mean, at a very young age, being stimulated yeah. sexually, and it's so, all because of the Catholic Church.
Yeah. So now being like repressed and stuff in school and that, I mean, did you like... Did anything go on with other girls and things like that?
Nah.
No, huh?
No, mostly fighting, because it's Catholic school where I grew up in, mm-hmm. you know, Ohio,
right.
was more where they sent all the bad kids.
I see.
So, I mean, you had to fight your way
yeah.
through school most of the time. I mean, it was like reform school uh-huh. with nuns beating you with, you know, I did get my hair pulled. You know, got smacked with a ruler. Yes, that does happen.
Mm, yeah.
I know. You're so turned on by that. I know men that are listening right now are like thinking about you getting your hair pulled, getting smacked by a ruler. Meanwhile, this is supposed to be punishment. I'm like, hot.
In that skirt. Right, you know,
exactly.
In the knee socks.
Exactly. Bend over my lap. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
what punishment?
Wow. It's amazing how much the Catholic Church is yeah. so much like the porn industry right now.
Just, yeah. There you go.
Write a book about that.
This is like, whoo, ching.
Uh-huh.
Sure
yeah.
am.
That's
yeah.
funny. We
yeah.
should write a book.
About porn and Catholic school. I'll write about porn. You write about the Catholic school.
Okay, we can do it together. That sounds great.
Compare the two.
No, yeah. that's true. You never know.
Yeah.
Very similar.
It just makes you very kinky.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did that happen? I mean, why do you say that it made you feel or made you kinky?
Made me kinky? I think just because you never know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never, you know, you're, oh God.
I'm a little
I
boy.
I so opened, you're like a 12-year-old boy.
I say that all the time. She Someone said, where you said, she said coming.
She said coming. Oh my God. See what she'll do when I say fart. What did you,
no,
that's the word
for
you.
No, anything sexual related.
It for
no.
Oh, okay, just sex.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to remember. She's like, no, that didn't work for me.
No, now I'm like, bone her down. Lost it.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Okay. Yeah, I am praying now. Our Father who art in heaven.
Please come on my face.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to...
What were we talking about?
Being kinky.
Being kinky at Catholic school. Yeah, I definitely think that has something to do with it. You yeah. never... I mean, it's just... I mean, those images of Jesus being naked, all that kind of stuff. I mean, at a young, oh, and being spanked. I mean, because, right. you know, technically all of those nerve endings mm-hmm. are in your, you know, your bottom area. Mm-hmm. And all those nerve endings that are in your bottom are attached to your sexual organs. Mm. That's just a scientific fact.
Right.
So a lot of times they do talk about that in psychology of, you know, when you do spanking, it is, at a young age, it is sexually arousing. I mean, right. it does. Yeah. It arouses you. I mean, if the nerve endings are connected, it's connected. Mm. It's a fact.
I see.
So,
And then also being probably told, too, like, sex is bad and you shouldn't. Like, every time you're told anything at a young age, then you just want to do it.
Right, exactly. You know? And you need to be a virgin and all this kind of stuff.
And nuns are walking around fully clothed.
Yes.
Like, yeah. No, but I'm just saying, so then all you want to do is take your clothes off.
Exactly.
You're like, I don't want to look like that.
I know. It's true, but I think that's a big setup. Yeah. I think it is with all of that.
But I would think in a situation like this, that totally, like, induces, like, lesbianism and stuff, doesn't it?
Oh, in private schools where there's only an all-girls school.
Right.
I have a lot of friends of mine who went to all-girls schools, and there's plenty of
Oh, so you didn't
around.
Go to an all-girls school.
No, there were boys
co-ed
there.
Co-ed and stuff.
It was co-ed.
Okay.
So there were boys there as well, and that's even, you know, that's even more ridiculous.
Yeah.
Too. I mean, I was taller than all the boys. Always. And I'm always at the end of the line, because first of all...
Oh, yeah, they go from shortest to tallest.
Shortest to tallest, and my last name is Vogel. It starts with a V, for God's sake. I'm going to have to marry somebody whose last name is, like, Anderson, just so for once I can get to the front of the fucking line.
And you're the youngest in the family, too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You last for everything.
The Von Trapps. I mean, I'm at the end again. You know, it's like, geez. So, yeah, I never...
That's funny, yeah.
Is anybody out there named Anderson? Call me. I'm single. You have to start with A, B, or C, because I'm not going to the middle or the end anymore. That's it. I'm over.
So then you got a little older and you moved to New York. What did you do there?
I actually was on tour with Jesus Christ Superstar.
Were you?
Yes, and ended up getting...
Funny. Back to Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
There you go. There's got to be something there.
Oh, my God. You guys, I'm going to need therapy after this. Just to kind
We're putting your whole life together for you.
I know. It's like we have this map, and now I understand it all.
See how it all works together? I told you.
I know. This. Maybe I just have to come here to talk to you guys, and I don't need therapy.
There you go.
Open up
the
your heart.
The answer is become Jewish.
Open up your heart. Oh, my God. And I was married to a Jew, darling, so we can
really?
Even get there eventually.
Jews. Okay.
Better person than I am.
Yeah.
I've never married a Jew.
Jewish guys are usually well hung, though.
I was just going to say they're huge. Well, I've never been with them, but I've heard.
Really?
Uh-uh.
You've never been with a Jewish guy?
No.
Girl, you have to.
I've never
to.
Been attracted to Jewish men.
Oh.
I've always liked the Latinos.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why. I think it's growing up in Miami and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Just kind of. But no, I mean, I used to hear... Well, my dad listens now, so I'm not going to say that.
What did you used to hear? Come on, just
no,
make
I've said it before. My mom used to say that my dad was really... Well,
yeah.
And I was like, these are not things I need to hear.
No.
And then I heard people
oh, why
like,
not?
No,
oh, right,
heard,
you're not Catholic. That would
right.
bother you.
No, but I've always heard how Jewish men are well hung.
They
so,
are.
Yeah.
They really are. And they know, I mean, and if they're not, if they don't have the mother complex going on, you've got it going on.
Right.
Because they're really attentive. Jewish men are very caring and attentive. I mean,
they
hear
they
be.
Cheat.
Really?
I just hear this about all men. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I was like, no. I don't know. I don't think Jewish men cheat. Yeah. I think they're afraid to.
You know? Too much guilt.
Yeah, exactly. Smack them into Saturday.
And you're going to take all their money. So.
And they know I will.
They're holding on to that
exactly.
money.
You see?
Got it.
They definitely know that. So, yeah, so New York was just a
You
whole...
think she's got some stereotypes over there?
Oh, we all do.
You know what's really funny? Like, day one that I, like, my first day here, mm-hmm. you and TJ were, like, stereotyping like crazy. And I was just like, God, you guys are stereotyping. And, like, that's all I do now. Yeah. You guys taught me well.
It's yeah, just easier that way, don't you think?
Yeah.
It's just funny.
To put everything in a box, right?
Yeah, it's funny that way.
Yeah.
It's funnier. It's easier. Yeah. It just cuts down on a lot of
uh-huh.
time.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're all just this way. Leave it at that.
I know.
Except me. I'm an individual. I'm unique.
You are, though. That's our girl.
So you're an actress and a singer.
Yes,
right?
A singer too. And I loved it. I was I actually was working. I worked on One Life to Live soap opera for
oh,
a few
nice.
Years. Played a reporter.
A few years.
Played a reporter.
Wow. Uh-huh.
And I loved it because I really wanted to sing, and I fell back on something sensible like acting.
Right.
So, you know, I was like an yeah. actress wanting to be a singer, and it was so funny. And then I ended up becoming a singer, and it was great, and had a couple
yeah.
of records out. And,
oh, nice. What kind know, of music? Absolutely.
I was the lead singer for a group called The Flirts. We did a song called Don't Put Another Dime in the Jukebox. Do you remember that?
I feel like I do. Yeah.
Don't put another dime in the jukebox.
Yeah, I know that song.
Yeah.
Really?
I
you
do.
Were singing that?
Yeah, and everybody gets wow. me confused with, what is it? What's her name? Joan Jett or something? Or
Yeah,
Joan Jett. The jukebox. I interviewed her once. I'm like, you would not believe how many times I just say, no, that wasn't my song. And then she kissed me. I made out with her, actually.
You did?
She did kiss me.
Wow, this what did you meet story. Her?
I met her when I was on the air. I had a an afternoon show on 102.5 Venus FM. It was kind of like a View kind of girl chick show. We got to be a little racy for, you know, mainstream. It was pretty racy.
Right.
And we did a lot of interviews, and Joan Jett came on, and just incredible. She looks, I'm telling you.
Wait, how long ago was this?
This was about 2 years ago when I did the interview with her. She looked phenomenal and hasn't had work done.
Wow.
And she looked great.
Bitch.
Yeah. I know. I was just staring at her going, oh, how do you do that? So,
And she's been around since the 70s, 80s,
yes,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember with what was the name of her group?
The Blackhearts.
Oh, okay.
Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
That's right, exactly. Right. They had like Cherry Bomb.
Yeah.
And those songs.
See, and she was actually, original member of the Runaways as well? The Runaways.
Yeah, that's
I
the one I'm thinking
girls.
About. The Runaways. Okay.
They were so good, and then they broke up. That was an all-girl group.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I know who she is. Yeah, I just didn't really listen to that music, but I know who she is.
Oh,
yeah.
So good.
I know what she looks like, too.
Yeah, she just... Something, and I think a couple years ago, she had a new single that she was doing that was coming out, and she was supporting that.
Were you at a bar?
No, we were in the studio.
Oh.
Studio, and then she was getting ready to leave, and she planted one right on my lips, and my co-host was like,
wow.
Whoa, and I thought, I looked at my co-host, I'm like, I'm going for it. Joan Jett's going to do it.
Yeah. Right.
I'm kissing back.
Yeah.
Right.
So she just made out. It wasn't even just a kiss. Like, she just made out with you?
Well, there was a little tongue involved.
Wow.
Really?
So I thought, well, you know, why not? What the heck?
Yeah,
you know,
what the hell? Joan Jett.
It was a good story.
Well, yeah.
And Heidi was really surprised. I was like, oh, no wonder guys like this. Women are soft.
Yeah.
You know,
was that the first time you ever kissed a girl?
No, but the one that I like refreshed my memory.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know what I mean?
You like to forget about the rest.
It was like a reboot, you know?
Right.
Like, okay, my computer's back up. Oh, now I remember this.
Yeah.
You know?
See, but that was the one thing about women for me. It was like, I mean, they are really soft, but that's why it would always remind me why I like men.
Yeah.
No, because it was always just like, oh, it's too soft. It's like kissing myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you've got a nice Hooters and
which
stuff.
Which to you would not be a problem.
You
so
do.
So what do you do with them?
I mean.
Well, I mean, what's.
No, but you have nice, like, you're soft.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd give good hug. You know what I mean?
And other things.
Yeah. And this is why she's not a lesbian.
My friend called me, isn't it, yesterday to me in the bar. He was like, have you told whoever I'm hanging out with these days, they're like, have you told them that you're the headmistress? And I was like, shut up. He was like, oh, you haven't done that yet. Just wait. It's going to be an official stalker.
I know we're going to get you like a whip for Christmas then. Or do you already have one?
I already have a Halloween costume like that.
Old girl. Snap.
No, but I think he meant more of like head.
Oh.
A head.
The headmistress.
Yes.
That's it. She's the one.
All right, so back to you and kissing Joan Jett.
God.
So, I mean, were you turned on? Do you remember? Did it turn you on, or it was just sort of like...
It was more of an honor.
Yeah. I mean, but it was like in public, right? It's not like... I mean, there were people around.
Oh, yeah. They were all around.
It's not like a romantic situation or anything.
No, I was looking saying, I'm going... Like I said, I'm going for it.
Yeah.
Then, you know, we get back on the air after she leaves, and I'm like...
She's made out with me.
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! You know, you can't even make this. You know, you can't make a promo like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, is she known for being a lesbian or?
I don't know. I can't say that. Mm. But I mean, I would think so.
You Googled her, didn't you? And you started like having a crush on her.
Is that what they call it? Googling
and Twittering.
I would think. I don't know. I can't say.
Yeah.
I didn't get to. I only went to first base with her, so I can't really
you
know.
Yeah. So what was it like with Jesus Christ Superstar? I mean, that must have been fun, right?
It was really, really fun and very dysfunctional. But, you know, you're all tours are just, I've been on tours before. And they're just going to, you know, they're going to be a train wreck eventually.
Right.
Eventually
all actors together and,
actors, you know. It's just...
very open and loving and free people, actors.
And also, it was just a different time. We were all young.
Right.
I mean, we were all in our, you know... If I lie about my age, I was 10 when I went on tour.
Yeah. But you were like in your 20s or something?
Yeah,
early
I was in
20s,
early...
Right?
I actually wasn't even 20 yet.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. I was young. I went right out, but...
Your hoary days.
Yes, I mean, your hoary days. And then I ended up being the assistant director because the director was so crazy that they left. And then I had to get up not only and wrangle everybody as well. I was kind of like... road manager, assistant director, all at the same time, and I would have to get up and do all the radio interviews in the morning and take him with me if he was not drugged up.
Right. Oh, wow.
You know, or if I couldn't get him up and roust him out of bed, I would have to go do the morning interviews.
Really?
And that's after then, you know, going to sound check, making sure everything was taken care of, then doing the show that night.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the show, drinking because I had to cope in some one way or another. Every day.
Yeah.
Seriously, every day I ate like a Big Mac, fries, and a big Coke. That was my breakfast. Uh-huh. And then I started drinking.
Yeah.
And that was it. So, and then staying
sounds
up.
Like those times.
You know, and then you would, you know, after the show, people come back and then you do like autographs or whatever, then go to a club and stay up and talk to everybody at clubs. Uh-huh. And then if you're in their town, they're like, oh, come party with us.
Totally.
And you're like, okay, I'm 20. I'm 19. I'm going to go do that. So, and then doing radio
Were you doing radio at that time? So you were?
No. That was the first time I had ever, you know, I'd been exposed to radio maybe in high school once when I went for like, you know, career day or something to a radio station. I loved it.
Yeah.
But that was the first time I was thrown into interviews at that point for radio. And it was very blurry, you know, just, and I also had to do the TV. I remember doing those like Good Morning LA shows and stuff. And I'm sitting there and it was so surreal because I was still drunk.
Yeah.
You know,
those are good interviews.
Yeah, they're really great. It was very popular.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that was my first kind of parlay into that that venue. But it was just a really good family. And I still have one girl that I keep in touch with from there.
Really?
Yes.
It must have had a big cast, though, right?
Huge cast and hard to wrangle them all together.
Yeah,
and then,
I would imagine.
Then money wasn't, you know, it was weird. It was like you would think that, you know, and back then, these things were on a different kind of budget than they are now. Like, we didn't have the nice band buses we had.
Oh.
Okay, you three, you're in the Honda.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like
Volkswagen
vans.
Exactly.
Or
yeah.
Wow. And then I was so like exhausted that I hung out with the band. Mm-hmm. I always loved the band.
Because you're a singer.
But yeah, and the guys in the band were so cool.
Yeah.
And they're mellow, if you know what I mean. And they could help me get down after the night.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's like like, you know, they had you know, Living Better Through Pharmaceuticals kind of things to help me kind of chill out at the end of the evening. And they were like my brothers.
Yeah.
And so I actually went in the band truck. So I sat in the middle and there was a big black guy that played Judas. And Judas was the different guy. This guy would sit in the shotgun seat and he was, you know, a guitar player or something like that. And our drummer was the driver. Okay. So the drummer, and he has long hair, and he looked like actually like that drummer from the Muppets.
Uh-huh.
He did, like, he had the long hair and he was like this white, skinny, skinny drummer dude. And I'm in the middle. Okay. And at that time I'm, you know, 19 years old looking like Barbie. So a tall blonde, skinny uh-huh. girl, since all I'm doing is eating one Big Mac a day and drinking,
right.
Maybe a little puffy, but, so we would get out to get gas and jump out of the car, and we must have looked like the Mod Squad or something.
That's really funny.
Because we would get out to get gas.
The black guy.
Yeah, black guy,
long
big skinny girl.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it just, it, we were, you know, we were like, hey, what's up? I'd be getting Doritos. And they probably were like, what the heck are these people doing in, like, a big white truck?
Yeah.
So, and we actually got pulled over because we did the Canadian. Also, we went to Canada as well. So, you know, they're just looking at us going, oh my gosh, who are these people? You know, and they're like going through the carpet looking for, you know, looking for seeds and buds and stuff. And I'm like, you're not going to find them. My dad was military.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing.
Was your dad supportive of like your whole acting and singing career?
Yes, because he went in college. He worked his way through college as a singer in a band and a screen dance caller. So he was all for it.
Gotcha. That's
cool. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah.
All for it. Taught me how to play guitar and sing. That's another thing I did in Catholic school.
How cool is that, huh? When your dad does
that. Yeah. Yeah. So, and he taught me projection and, you know, that kind of, I guess that was before, like, really great microphones.
Uh-huh.
You know? But, yeah, so he was just very, very supportive.
Yeah. That's cool. So, and what happened after that then? I mean, at a certain point, you decided you're going to leave New York?
Actually, in New York.
She slept with everybody by that point.
Yeah. She's been through the whole city.
I wish. I got stupid and got married to that Jewish guy.
Oh, that's right. So you were married
during
the tour?
And that was in New York?
Yeah, that was in New York.
I'm sorry.
No,
that's
okay.
No, it wasn't during the tour. The tour ended, and that's kind of how I ended up in New York. I got dumped off in New York.
I see.
That kind of thing. You know, and I actually lived with my Dominican uncle. He was part of the family from the Dominican Republic. And, you know, those Dominicans are everywhere in New York. And he had a great place.
Yeah.
I lived in his maid's quarters.
Maybe that's why I thought it was Puerto Rico, because Puerto Ricans are all in New York, too.
I know, like, everywhere. I love these stereotypes. And they're going, they are, and they all play baseball. Which I did date a baseball player down in Dominican Republic.
Did you?
And a basketball player.
You know another
player.
Stereotype? After a couple of beers, they all like each other.
Yeah, they
just suddenly turn gay.
That is such a good stereotype,
too. It's very true.
Really?
I know.
That was my threesome with, like, two busboys. I didn't know they were, like, gay.
They were into each other.
Yeah, I found out afterwards they were boyfriends, but only boyfriends after a couple of drinks.
Hey, did they pay attention to you during the threesome?
Oh, I didn't. When we had the threesome, it was all about me. But then, like, the next day, people at work all talked, and they were like, do you know that they're a couple? I'm like, what?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing they were attentive.
Well, I'd be attentive to me, too.
Well, you're pretty, and they're probably just like
that.
No, but they're really, really, you're pretty, and they're probably like, oh, my gosh.
No, but that's the thing. They're really into women, but then after, like, some drinks and stuff, they're known for being, like, overly sexual and overly horny, and I think they get so horny after drinks that they're just like,
They go for whatever they can get.
Yeah, like, whatever's there.
Yeah, because they all deny it. Like, we're at work, because I've worked in the restaurant industry for years, and they're all like, we do not like each other, da-da-da-da-da. And then they'll look at each other, like, smack each other's asses or be like, oh, last night. And then I'm like, oh, my God, you guys are
That's why I loved watching the World Series. That was so nice, because they do something, like, smack their asses, and you're like, oh, my God, I saw something jiggle. I about had a heart attack. It was so good. And I'm watching with my friends here in L.A., and the whole time I'm like, oh, boy, you know, everybody's mad at me, because I kept thinking some of the guys from the Philly team are hot. Mm-hmm. And they're like, shut up. They're going to win if you keep doing this. And so, you know, in that one game we were down, I thought, oh, geez, I think I've got to stop this. But I love that, and especially when it rains and they wear those white uniforms, you can see right through the uniforms.
I need to watch baseball a little more.
That's what my aunt.
Funny, I never noticed that.
Just wait now.
That was my baseball, when I went to a baseball game, my aunt, she took me, she said, we're going to go to a baseball game. I'm like, all right. And she had binoculars. I'm like, okay, this is going to be cool. So, you know, she gets me a beer.
Uh-huh.
I was 16. She gets me a beer. We sit down and we start watching the baseball game. And she's like, okay, look, check this out. I'm like, what? She's showing me all the asses. She goes, what
do
you think?
They do have the best bodies, baseball players.
Yeah, oh,
they
my
all
gosh. Bouncing quarters off there. I mean, I'm serious. Mm-hmm. I think we should get a baseball player in here and see if you can really bounce a quarter off his ass.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't believe the stereotypes flying around
That's
here
That's not stereotype.
Today.
That is
no,
true.
No, you're stereotyping everybody today. Which I think is extremely funny.
Wait, I'm still on the ass bouncing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, you said all baseball players have hot bodies. Right?
Yeah, they pretty much do. I mean, they have to.
There's only one or two that don't, because there was a pitcher during the World Series that was kind of a big guy, and he wore those baggy pants, and that was upsetting to me.
Yeah. See, I grew up on football. I just remember them all smacking each other's asses.
Yes.
Good game.
Oh, I love that. And that's the only thing, too, is at the end of the World Series, I was watching with my friend Margaret, and we were watching, and I'm exhausted. I'm like, I got to go. She goes, no, you can't leave yet. We're going to go to the locker room scene. I'm like, with the champagne bottles, those, like, you know, the corks are flying off and it's flying everywhere and the guys don't have their shirts on and the bubbles are going down their bodies and
we sound like two guys
asses.
Right now talking about, like, women.
It is like orgasmic. And then we were so mad because we were robbed. They didn't do that.
Oh.
I mean, it just, but don't you, I mean, don't you love those scenes? Like, in the locker
really
room?
I love anything with men.
And the hockey players. Oh, God.
So you got married. At what point did you get married?
I got married when I was 23.
Mm-hmm.
So,
How did you guys meet?
Yeah. We met actually when I was a bartender for all of 6 months in New York.
And you drank them dry, the bar.
Yeah, really? I got fired because I didn't cheat. I got fired because they were teaching me how to do the inventory. Oh. And I would do the morning inventory as well. And I didn't realize that I was supposed to pad the inventory.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, and I found this out later because I was dating the owner's son. And he told me later, he said, you dumbass. This is not the way we do things. He said, Tony was trying to teach you how to do it. And I'm like, oh, Tony, I get it now. Shit. Why didn't you guys tell me that earlier?
Yeah.
So I was a bartender, and my husband came in with this other guy, and he was so cute. And the other guy's really hot.
Mm-hmm.
So, like a dumbass, you flirt with the guy that is not as hot.
Right.
To look cool in front of the guy that's really hot.
Right.
So I start flirting with the guy that ends up being my husband.
Aim higher next time.
I was like, wait a minute. And so, and he was just a wonderful, just a great guy. And our first date, He was a real estate investment banker on Wall Street, so dressed in a suit. And
Jew,
oh my
of course.
God, he wore the most incredible suits.
That's such a big deal as a good dresser.
Oh, and those crisp shirts and, you know, those
ties. I saw him when I was just out in New York. I was just like, I never thought I was attracted to Wall Street men. And then I just like saw them. I was like, okay, you guys are hot.
Yeah, I know.
So are the cops or the firefighters.
I know they're the same as a uniform. They're the same thing. You can just, they're just, oh, and I love, you know, running your hand up that crisp white shirt. Okay, wait. Okay, so where am I? Anyway, so I was, he came, it was my first real date in New York, because usually I would just go out and do after hours bars and get drunk and, you know, do that kind of thing. So I actually had a proper date for once. So he was coming to pick me up for a date, and usually that's unusual in New York that a guy's going to come pick you up in a car for a date.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I had my bar manager come out, you know, come and meet him, and I said, if I don't call you by midnight. And I said, let's walk outside. And we took down his license plate number. And he had a Porsche.
At that point, I'm like, I'm not calling you at midnight.
I was like, you know, I think my pants are coming off. You know, I'm just saying. So he had a Porsche, you know, the nice thing. And he said, you know, this is the whole military thing, you know, coming back. And we get in the car. He's like, what kind of guys have you been dating that you have to write down the thing? I said, hey, you know, I'm just being a safe girl.
Yeah.
So we went out, and it was absolutely wonderful. Great, great date. Had a good time. And he took me to one of those, you know, nouveau restaurants in New York where they give you something like the size of a quarter.
I know, yeah, but it's so cool.
It's really so pretty. Dining.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think our bar tab was like 400 times more than maybe about the same, but I was starving at the end of the date. I'm just starving. And so he's getting ready to take me home. This is when I lived in Harlem, you know, driving him home in my Porsche. I'm like, do you think you could pull over at the Burger King? I said, I would really like, I just want a burger. I'm so hungry.
Yeah. And so, see, most people wait till like the guy leaves and then they're like chowing down. You're like, stop me. And that's funny.
But actually, I asked him to pull over to the McDonald's and he said, well, let's go to Burger King instead. And so I go on this whole rampage about how Burger King, how, you know, those burgers, they taste like they drop them in the charcoal boiled my ass. It's like, it tastes like dirt and all this stuff. And so I make him, he then takes me to the McDonald's. And, you know, 3 days later, I get this wonderful card that I still have in the mail. And it's like, you're a beautiful sight at night, and had the New York skyline on and opened up. And it was just like, enjoyed our date. And on the inside, there were all these coupons for Burger King. He freaking owned a Burger King, you guys.
No, he didn't.
He owned a Burger King. And I was like, I just trashed your entire restaurant system.
That
I was
is
like,
awesome.
Oh, my God.
That is awesome. It's so funny he didn't even tell you that night when you were saying all that. That's a great way.
Didn't tell me
I would have married him, too.
I was like, didn't tell me anything. And I got coupons. I'm like, well, I guess I could eat these dirty.
They can marry the
Jew. I think it's funny that you wanted to go to McDonald's. And he was like, no, Burger King.
And I'm like, no. Like, we're going to
McDonald's. Can't be a traitor.
Yeah, he's like, no, we got to go there. This is money out of my pocket right now. So, yeah. Yeah, so that's
those Jewish men.
He's so good.
I know, right? Like, he has to like give to his own company, or he probably got it for free, actually.
He did. It was part of those things. I use those coupons, man. I got stacks. I was giving them out because, come on, we were starving.
Yeah.
You know, bartenders, all my friends.
How long were you married for?
Almost, like, I think 7 years.
That's seven-year itch.
Any kids?
Just him.
Just him. Okay.
No, he was a really good guy.
Yeah.
Really, really good guy.
But so you guys stayed friends?
Yeah, afterwards? We're still friends, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Actually, still friends. So he's like family. He just, you know, he had a depression time, too. And and I think that was part of one of the other catalysts that I started. I was brought down to Nashville as a full-time songwriter and a recording artist as well. So, and I was going through the divorce at the time. So I think that's kind of like it was all encompassed. And he even helped me pack. And, you know, I'm sitting there boo-hooing. And, you know, I had one Tiffany candlestick. I'm like, here, I'll leave you the other one. He's like, I don't even like fucking Tiffany candlesticks. I'm not going to use them when I'm going to have a, you know, a dinner party. I don't think
so.
Right. And we even used the same divorce attorney.
Really?
So, yeah. Oh, we used the same attorney just to kind of, because it was just a very caring.
It was
the
nicest divorce ever.
It was.
Yeah.
It really was. I gave him the damn condo, though.
Oh.
No wonder it was a nice divorce. Jeez.
He's like, she's getting screwed.
I was like, oh my God, what an idiot. So, yeah, I took the car and my money.
Oh, you got the Porsche?
No, the Porsche was long gone. I had a Toyota 4Runner.
Oh, okay.
At that point, but that was pretty cool for Nashville.
Yeah.
You know, it was looking butch and stuff, you know.
So you decided to move to LA.
Yeah.
And was that after the divorce then?
Oh, the divorce is like years ago. Divorce, and then Nashville.
Right.
And then worked in Nashville for quite a while.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in Nashville and did radio and Had shows in radio, did morning show, afternoon show. You know how formats
That's
flip.
That's cool. Yeah. So when did you move
formats.
Here?
I just moved here in May.
Oh, really?
Oh, you're a newbie.
I'm a newbie.
Yay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was May. And she lives in West Hollywood right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, really? We live really close.
Really?
It's great.
So why did you move here? I mean, just because of entertainment?
Well, my girlfriend, Tara McNamara, was my entertainment reporter on the show. And she kept saying, you need to come out here. And I was working for Mix 92.9, which is a AC station, the number one station in Nashville. And, you know, radio right now is having difficulty, mainstream radio. So we were all put down to part-time, lost benefits, you know, that kind of thing, just to keep everything going. And it was a really great setting, a good, you know, family kind of oriented setting.
Right.
But I also did a lot of commercials and, you know, that kind of stuff. And those things now, a lot of people weren't doing spokesperson things anymore. Mm-hmm. So that was my bread and butter,
right.
Making that as well as doing commercials and, you know, industrials. And that started drying up. Yeah. And Tara said, just come out to L.A. There's more things for you to do. I've been writing a lot of scripts as well. And her husband said, hey, listen, they had just gotten married, so I got to stay at their house in Willoughby, which was wonderful. So they said, come on. And then I have an agent that gave me a car to drive for a couple months. So I had a free place to stay, free car to drive.
I can't get an audition from an agent. She gets a car.
Yeah.
Jesus, I'm doing wrong.
Yeah, I had to give it back. Yeah. So,
got to know the right people.
So it was kind of like being pushed. I kept getting pushed in this direction to come here.
Right.
And since I've been here, it's been really wonderful.
Oh, really?
It's been
well, I'm
good.
Glad to hear.
I've had a really good experience and met, like you guys, a lot of great, wonderful people. And
wonderful.
And having fun and getting my sea legs back.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's nice.
So are you pursuing acting and here full time?
Yeah.
Is that why you're here?
I've already done like an independent film already since I've been here.
Bitch.
Played them. Yeah, guess what my role was?
Doesn't matter.
The mother.
Oh my God, it's the worst thing ever. I get sent out for mom roles and I'm like, no, I'm not. But
I'm
yes,
like,
I am.
Oh, Jesus, I'm now the mother.
I know, it's the worst feeling ever.
I know, I had, like, last week, I had my third callback for another movie, and it was for the mother of a 15-year-old gay boy whose friend just committed suicide, and she was a recovering alcoholic. I'm
Jesus.
Like, hello, welcome to typecasting. Although I am not a recovering, I'm still drinking, but I just was like, oh, my third callback, and they said, okay, we're going to shoot the first week in December, and then nothing. I've heard nothing for like 4 days.
Something else is in the works.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, for goodness sake. But, you know, I think of it as a free acting class.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, instead,
yeah,
yeah. instead of paying $250 a month, I just go on as many auditions as possible and
That's
learn.
That's true. Yeah.
So it's good.
Well, we're at the top of the show. I mean, we're out of time. And, yeah, do you believe it?
Wow.
Time flies.
I know. You're so much fun
well,
to
you've
talk
been,
to.
Yeah, you've been a lot of fun,
Thank
Trish.
You.
Thanks so much. And, that's it, Sherry. We're totally out of time.
I know.
So,
I yammered and
yeah,
I hacked.
You did.
Back to the coffee.
You did. All right, everyone. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll be back here tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam and Sherry in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. till 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question or comment for the show, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Sherry in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. We'll be right back.